Our next speaker, brethren, is Brother Timothy Krupa from the Portland Ecclesia. Brother Timothy Krupa also has been here many times, and I think we've been refreshed by his lessons and by his insight very much. Today he has chosen a very intriguing subject, that is, the legacy of the Samaritans. We're pleased to introduce Brother Timothy Krupa.
It's been a pleasure to see you all here, to fellowship with you. Some of you I haven't gotten around to say hello yet, but we'll do that, and to share in the spiritual instruction that we have received already. I would like to stir up your minds this afternoon regarding the subject of humility. And I would like to take a lesson from a group of people called the Samaritans. After the death of King Solomon, the 12 tribes of Israel had what amounted to a civil war. 10 of the tribes broke away. They were the northern tribes. They left behind Judah and Benjamin, the two in the south. The northern 10 tribes became known as Israel, and the two to the south, as Judah. Jerusalem remained the capital of the southern kingdom, and the 10 tribes chose for their capital city a beautiful fortified town in the territory of Manasseh. It was 34 miles, only 34 miles north of Jerusalem. And it was called Samaria. Samaria was the capital of the northern kingdom for something like 200 years. Both kingdoms, Judah and Israel, forsook the covenant with Jehovah. Both north and south went to idolatry. Both forsook the law. Both ignored the prophets. Both intermarried with the heathen. Both took the miracles that Jehovah performed for both kingdoms as just happenstance that they deserved. Over the centuries, the rivalry between the two nations became more bitter and more bitter. The Judean Jews of Jerusalem finally stopped even referring to their northern brethren as Israel. You see, if they kept the expression of Israel in their daily language, they might be forced to include them in the promises and in the blessings. For example, when they read and quoted Jeremiah regarding the new covenant, 31:31, Jehovah says, "Behold, I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." For the Judeans to quote that and still call the northern tribes Israel, no, that was too much. That included them in the blessings. So instead they began to call the northern tribes by the name of their capital. They started to call them Samaria. They started to call them the Samaritans. It was an expression of scorn. It was a defamatory remark. It was a racial slur. It was an ethnic put down. The Samaritans were rubble. They were ignorant. They were illegitimate. In Jesus' day, the controversy raged. The Jews of Jerusalem would not even speak to a Samaritan. And to the best of their ability, they avoided stepping on the Samaritan territory. We see in the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he made accommodation to this social prejudice, to this phenomenon that was going on. He said in Matthew 10:5, as he sent out the 12, "Enter not into any Samaritan city." I think he also did this at this early time in the disciples' career to not give them an assignment more difficult than they could handle at that time. Now, from the Samaritans' point of view, it was different. They thought, they considered themselves to be Israelites. Yes, sure, there was some intermarriage with the heathen rulers that had come in and taken them over. But they said, "We're Jews. Where do the Jews of Jerusalem get off telling us we're not Jews? Who died and left them boss that they were to decide who is a Jew?" They said, "We still look for the Messiah. We believe in the prophets." But as a group, they didn't push themselves. They kept to their territory, and they kind of realized that their background wasn't the greatest. There were three incidents that occurred in Jesus' life that I think reveal to us an insight into the Samaritan heart and mind. And I think it shows us, at least, how Jesus looked at the Samaritans. First is in the 4th chapter of John. In the first 42 verses of this 4th chapter, we have the story of what we call now the woman of Samaria. You remember she had 5 husbands. She was now living with another man. Jesus was at the well of Jacob. He was in Samaritan territory. And you remember that the woman, in her discussions with Jesus, she said, "You know, Jacob gave us this well." Jacob was Israel. He was the father of the 12 tribes. We see that they held to that heritage. And Jesus and this woman had a beautiful discussion about water, about the living water. And we see in the account some interesting things about the woman. We can say easily that she lived a life that was questionable. But look at the attributes. For one, she was honest. You have to give her that. There was no attempt at cover-up, no attempt at excuses or rationalization. Secondly, it's to her honor that she believed that Messiah was coming. And thirdly, even though she perceived Jesus as a Jew from the southern territory, she asked him to give her of some of that living water. There must have been something special about this woman, because Jesus revealed something to her that he did not do very often. We see in verses 25 and 26 that he tells this woman of Samaria that he indeed is the Messiah. That was unusual, wasn't it? That wasn't his style, to let people know, especially early in his career. Most unusual. And you know what was almost equally as unusual? She believed him. That's the kind of woman this was. Interesting person. There was something sweet about her. There was something open about her. And there was something humble about her. And that's why Jesus opened to her some great truths. Yes, she believed on him, and she went back to the city. And eventually, others of that Samaritan city believed on Jesus. You know, these Samaritans worshipped in a mountain. It wasn't just any mountain. In Deuteronomy 11:29, Moses said it was a mountain of blessing. And because it ended up in the Samaritan territory, the Samaritan said, this is the mountain we will worship on. It wasn't a bad choice. But again, Jesus told her a great truth. He said, no, it's not your Samaritan mountain. It's not even the mountain in Jerusalem, which was an incredible admission, right, for a southern territory Jew to say to her. He said God was to be worshipped in spirit and in truth. The Jews down south really liked their Mount Zion. Up north, the Samaritans liked their mountain. And you know what I think? We probably like our own mountains. I think probably everybody has their own mountain. Something that you look to, something that's visible, something that's stable, something that gives you a feeling of security. What's your mountain? Is it an organization? Is it an ecclesia? Is it a man? Is it a bank account? Do you get your strength from your family? Or, as our friend told us this afternoon, is it your job? That's not where the Lord wants us to rely on. Spirit and truth, simply stated, means your character. It means your heart and your mind. It means your sentiments. It's a mindedness. It's a humility. That humble attitude of the Samaritan woman is what allowed Jesus to reveal these truths to her. That's part of the legacy that we gain from the Samaritans. The second incident is in Luke, the 17th chapter. This is the beautiful Thanksgiving story of the 10 lepers. You remember it well. 10 were healed and sent to the priest. I am sure that all 10 of those healed men rejoiced. For sure, they were all happy. I'm sure that all 10 of them gave Jesus the credit. I'm sure of that. I'm sure that all 10 of them even witnessed to the fact to others for the rest of their lives that they were healed by Jesus. But only one had the thoughtfulness to return and say thank you. Was it because he was a Samaritan? Was it because he had grown up doubly cursed? He was cursed with leprosy and he was cursed with Samaritanism. Was it because he was a minority that he was humble? That he didn't think more highly of himself than he ought? Again, that thoughtfulness of thankfulness is another legacy from the Samaritan. The third incident is in Luke, the 10th chapter. This is the account of the good Samaritan. Just think of it for a moment. The phrase Samaritan was an ethnic, racial slur. It was a bad word in those days. And here, juxtaposition is now the good bad guy. The good Samaritan. I looked at the account, trying to find in it, did it say it's a parable? Does it say that Jesus like told this story or something? I don't think it says. And after looking at it and getting all enthused about the Samaritans, I've come to the conclusion it's a true story. Anyway, Jesus told an account about a man of very special character. You know the story well. There was a man going from Jerusalem to Jericho. He was robbed. He was left for dead. Who would help him? The priest came, failed the test. The Levite came, failed the test. And it was a Samaritan who helped, who went really beyond the call of duty, as you know the story. The goodness, the purity, this open love, the willingness to take a risk of this Samaritan is really something. And it's a characteristic that must be found in us. That openness, that willingness to take a risk. You know, an interesting side thought is that in Matthew 26:13, when Mary anointed Jesus' feet before he died, you remember that in this account, Jesus said that her deed would be told throughout the world because of her kindness to him in his last days. You know that same thing has happened to this man called the Good Samaritan? The story of his love has spread the world like almost no other story. There are hospitals now named for this man. They're called the Good Samaritan Hospitals. There are service clubs that are named after this man. You've heard it. It's the Good Sam Club. They're dedicated to helping people. And they have even instituted laws that protect people who try to give first aid at the scene of an accident from later getting sued. And do you know what they call the laws? Good Samaritan laws. That's how good this man was. That's how good his heart was, how his love was, and his action, that the story lived. That's another legacy we have from this group of people called the Samaritans. Now, in addition to the good things that the Samaritans have given us, there are also some lessons to be learned from the attitudes of their detractors. What was the problem of the people who couldn't stand the Samaritans? This side of the story is a lesson in bigotry, in prejudging, and arrogance. Prejudice is a label that we give to a closed mind. In a closed mind, all decisions, all judgments were made many years ago. The ultimate prejudger has learned all the necessary lessons in previous years. And from that rich background, all new experiences can be dealt with without even thinking. All categories of good and bad, valuable or not valuable, correct or incorrect, holy, unholy, right or wrong, you don't have to even think. You can instantly prejudge by your past experience. This is an attitude of a black and white world where nothing is gray and nothing ever changes. The Samaritans are bad. The Jews of Jerusalem are good. The brethren from this class are deeply consecrated. The ones from the other class, by and large, are well-wishers. In many cases, in most cases, the decision how to categorize can be based on one or two words. Give me one word and I can decide. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a sentence, there's a blank in it, I'm going to fill in the blank. He's from Chicago. Doesn't that tell you all you need to know about that brother? I mean, really now, from Chicago. Let me give you another example. He's from the Dawn. Doesn't that tell you all you need to know? You know what he believes. You know what he stands for. You know what he goes. You know everything about him. You see the power of one or two words in prejudging? Go right down the list. I have another one. He's French. Tells you all you need to know. Down the list, he's liberal. He's conservative. He's a Russellite. Whatever. He's from Portland. Bible student, stereotypes, prejudgments. It's not what God wants. He wants us to keep thinking. He wants us to keep struggling with decisions, not prejudging. Things change. People change. The world changes. The spirit and the mind, that capacity must grow. The second problem, arrogance. The Judean Jews were arrogant. Arrogant comes from a feeling of superiority. Somehow you're better. Either you've got more of it or in better quality. It's an assumption of importance. In Philippians 2:3, it talks about how we should evaluate others, how we should esteem others. The feeling of arrogance esteems others less than we are. They're less consecrated, less studious, less active, less loving. That's what the superiority then leads us to feel and express arrogance. This really must be important because the scriptures are so full of phrases regarding arrogance and pride. In Proverbs 9:13, we see that the Lord says that he hates pride and arrogance. And in Proverbs 26:12, it says, do you see a man who is wise in his own conceit? There's more hope for a fool than for him. There must be hundreds of scriptures that talk about pride and arrogance. The Judean Jews assumed they were the elite. They assumed they were chosen. They assumed they were a super race. They assumed they had a genetic superiority. The same attitude today, translated to spiritual Israel, would make the same assumptions. That they are the most enlightened, the most chosen, and therefore destined for the highest rewards. The attitude of the Judean Jews was an abomination to Jehovah, because it wasn't true. They weren't the elite. They weren't superior. They weren't holy. The Judean Jews assumed the Samaritans were outside of God's circle of dealings. The same attitude today would translate again to those outside of God's circle, those not spirit begotten, those not completely consecrated, etc. God will only admit to the divine nature those who demonstrate by their lives that they understand that all gifts are from God. 1 Corinthians 4:7. It's not enough just to understand that all gifts are from God. You must demonstrate by your actions and your attitudes and your humility that you really believe that everything you have is from God. So the legacy of the Samaritans is that despite their questionable background, despite the questionable heritage, there were individual Samaritans whose hearts were so pure, so humble, so loving, that God could offer to them the opportunity of running for the prize of the high calling. The lesson for you and me is that if we would desire that same honor, we must rid ourselves of prejudice, arrogance, any manifestations of superiority, and we can only serve God in spirit and in truth. There was one time when the Jews were attacking Jesus. And they called him the worst thing they could think of. It's in John 8:48. They called Jesus a Samaritan. They said, "You're a Samaritan and you're possessed of a devil." You know, he did not respond at all to the ethnic slur. He passed it by. He didn't defend himself. He didn't say, "No, I was born here," or whatever. He said, "I am not possessed." But he made no mention of the other issue. Because he knew very well that there were Samaritans, individuals, who had the right attitude. And he knew that in God's eyes, it was no insult to be called a Samaritan. May it be said of us, may it be said that we are good Samaritans. May it be said of us that we are thoughtful and thankful. May it be said of us that we did not worship God on a mountain that we chose, but that we worshiped God in spirit and in truth. And if at any time someone should call you something like a Samaritan, may it be for your life, living in spirit and in truth and of good deeds.